You have to set up investor expectations. If you're raising capital from investors, we've run into this issue in the past. I've run into this issue in the past where you set expectations, you send them an OM of what you're going to do or your syndication docs or whatever. Hey, we're going to go out and find 10 deals and we're going to give you this return or whatever. Then the market shifts and now returns are lower and now you're stuck, right? So you have to set investor expectations. Guys, you're jumping into this business. Storage is wonderful, but 10% return cash on cash year one is probably not going to happen unless you find a needle in a haystack, a massive haystack, right? So this is probably not going
to
happen.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Chris Bennett buys self-storage facilities in growing markets and business-friendly states. He resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, man. Pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
That is a great question, Sam. So I started in real estate in 2007, right before the Great Recession. If anybody remembers that time, it was pretty rough. We thought we're all going to be rich. I was in my real estate licensing class and going to become a residential broker. And obviously the world changed over the next 2 years. Actually soured me on real estate. I was doing foreclosure work. So when people think about like banks and all that foreclosing on folks, well, how do they do that? Well, they contact agents and have them go evict people. And so that's what I was doing. And it was not fun whatsoever. I was single at the time, no family. Had I had a family, had kids, I would have just cried my heart out every day. So that was really tough. Decided to go to school and get away from real estate as far as I could. Coincidentally, the only job I could find it my first summer in college was at a real estate investment firm, a private equity firm in Chapel Hill. And I had no idea what he was doing, but he hired me on to do some underwriting and whatnot. It opened my eyes to the fact that you can buy massive commercial real estate. He was doing apartments, but the idea is you can raise capital to buy these large buildings and make money doing it. And my eyes like bugged out, right? So right. One, I hadn't seen that many zeros before in my life. And then another was, oh my gosh, this is how you do it. So the light bulb went on. Make a long story short, I graduated, worked at a family office in Raleigh, North Carolina, doing multifamily acquisitions. We pivoted to storage, raised a storage fund on CrowdStreet. That fund is doing really well. They're, I think, on fund two or three at this point. So connected with passiveinvesting.com about a year ago. I've known one of the principals for a number of years before we got into real estate investing and kept that relationship going. And that's where we are now, leading the storage arm of passiveinvesting.com. And did you ask where are we going with that as well? Or did I answer everything there?
I don't know, man. That was a great summary.
Okay, good.
Went a lot of places, but I love it. No, that's good. That's really, really interesting. So back up a little bit when you said CrowdStreet and just kind of define how you guys interface on that front. What was that story there?
Yeah, sure. So the firm I was with was called 10 Federal. If people want to look it up, it's called 10 Federal, 10federal.com. When I started there, I was their director of acquisitions, which is a fancy title for bird dog. So in other words, go find deals from brokers or owners. And so that's what I was doing, mostly in the Carolinas. This is about 2016. So multifamily properties in the Carolinas. I made a bunch of phone calls, talked to a bunch of brokers, underwrite a bunch of properties. I was doing all of that work and I just couldn't make the numbers work on stuff. So just kind of summarizing here, I had a couple of deals in a contract that fell out, et cetera. So we decided to pivot to self-storage. And the reason being is that the guys I was working for had a little bit of experience within storage and they were building some small facilities for themselves using SBA financing. And we can talk about what that is if you want to, but SBA financing. So small, meaning 15,000 square feet or less. So think maybe 150 to 200 units or less. That is small in self storage. And since they had that experience, great. Okay. So we know how to do it, right? Finance and whatnot and kind of like what to look for. Well, we need to raise capital. Okay. Well, we're not that good at that. So let's go ahead and partner up with CrowdStreet. And this is again, 2016, 2017. So 2017 really for the storage fund. And so we were able to do so, put together the offering memorandum and all the organizational docs behind it all, and basically put it on CrowdStreet on their website and raise capital through that platform. I'm sure their terms and conditions and whatnot have changed, but obviously you pay them some money. You pay them some money to be able to go do that. Almost knocked over my tea here. And it was successful. So the goal was to raise about $10 million. I think we raised pretty darn close to that for our very first fund put out, you know, that was put out there for the public to see and criticize and invest with and get on board with. So that was a lot of fun. That was a successful raise and deployment of that capital.
How many deals had you guys done before you launched with CrowdStreet?
Oh man, within the firm at 10 Federal at the time, between apartments and storage, man, I can't remember, maybe 10 to 15, something like that. Maybe I'm overcounting that. I can't remember exactly. And so that was all mostly with five or six close investors who had obviously were repeat investors who would take down those deals with us.
So what was the approximate, and I'm getting to something here, what was the approximate assets under management at that point, you know, when you guys went to CrowdStreet?
I think it was, so we had apartments mostly. I want to say total value was maybe $200 to $300 million.
Okay.
I can't remember. So they're and a little bit larger.
The reason I ask that is just because as people think about that, as they think about, you know, the thrust of the show is how to scale. As I think about, yeah, you know, hey, at some point in the future, maybe I'd like to partner with a CrowdStreet, a Realty Mogul, yeah, someone of that sort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you have to be in order to do that? And obviously, yep, you have a significant track record. $200 or $300 million in assets under management is not a small amount of real estate, mm-hmm, to own. So just as people hear that and go, oh, hey, that'd be cool someday, that gives them kind of a marker as to where you need to be with,
yeah, that. Yeah, exactly.
What were some of the things that you liked and didn't like about partnering with CrowdStreet? And again, I'm going somewhere with this.
Oh, sure. They were actually really, so that was 2017. So that's about 5 years ago. So they have new people in place and all this stuff and new, sure, processes and new vetting procedures and everything. So people have to realize that as well. So I'm talking a little bit, half a decade ago, about what we're doing. So at the time, I think the pricing was a little bit steep and people have to realize that, how they had it structured at that time. They had what they call investor rooms and whatnot. And so basically each investor that comes in through your portal, they would go to a website essentially set up for them that gave them all these statistics and capabilities to invest and vet the deal and all that kind of stuff. And that would cost you money based upon the number of investors. There was an upfront fee to get started. You know, there's a number of things. Right. So it is expensive. And that would, I'd say, be one of the downsides or cons to it. The upside was they were great to work with, very easy to work with. They kind of held your hand through the process. You send them, you know, financials and your underwriting and all these other things. So they're kind of looking over your shoulder to make sure that, hey, you're not fudging the numbers here or something like that. And that you're not making a mistake, obviously, within your projections, because they have to put it out there. But they help you kind of make it look professional and good and presentation worthy to their investors. So again, it was a long time ago. Their logo and colors had changed. Back then it was like red and something else. So it's been a while, but it's a bit pricey. But I think if you're trying to raise capital from the general public without registering your securities, it's a great way to do it and kind of offload some of that work to someone else.
Right. And I don't think any of those things that you've just said have changed too terribly much, just on the cost of capital side of things.
Yeah.
It's more expensive capital to get a hold of. But again, yeah, like you said, you get to offload some of that administrative burden and bring
it. Absolutely. In, yeah,
more. So that's fantastic. Yeah. I love that. You know, we've had several people come on the show, obviously, at, you know, 500 and something episodes, and talk about self-storage. And we always hear about the pros of self-storage. What do you think are some of the cons of being in self-storage?
Right now, there are, the biggest one is the amount of competition to purchase deals and the high prices and low cap rates as a result. So people, they look at the high level, like the pros, like you said, and we could talk about that or whatever, but, you know, oh man, the storage is great. Let's get into it. And you have coaches and people out there that people can, you know, pay to help them find deals, and you can follow different podcasts, et cetera, to help you figure out how to find a deal and close on a deal, which is all great. That's all the mechanics of it. But you don't realize that, bro, these are expensive assets. This is not like picking up bird nests off the ground or something like that, right? This is very difficult to do. And I don't think people realize that as one of the cons. There is so much capital piling into self-storage right now. The misconception is that, oh, as interest rates go up, prices will come down. Mathematically, yes, that should be the case. But because there's so much demand and so much capital out there that's flowing into self-storage, prices are staying high. They are not coming down just yet. We might see it come down later this year. Depends on really where interest rates go. But right now, that's not the case. Another con is the fragmented ownership, and the mom and pop type ownership is great. But mom and pops, if you're looking for smaller deals, which I've done that in the past, if you're looking for smaller deals, when I say small, I'm saying maybe 20,000 square feet plus or minus somewhere in there, then they don't have good record keeping. They're sometimes difficult to deal with. When they send you, I've done deals, the guy literally sent a photo of a unit mix that he drew by hand because he didn't have records to send me the unit mix, right? So you have to be ready to deal with that kind of stuff. And then when you go to, if you're using the bank for financing, the bank is going to want to see some sort of financial history there. Sometimes mom and pops keep all their businesses commingled into one P&L. And you got to figure out what the heck is that. He's got a car business, a storage business, and he's got some single family rentals, and it all comes into here. And he's telling me it's this, but I can't figure. So you're going to be scratching your head with those kinds of deals. If you go to institutional, larger deals, you don't have that problem, but smaller deals, you could run into that problem. The other side of it is because the pro is it's an inflation hedge. I'm sure some people have heard that now. Rates are going up, so you can raise your rental rates. Well, you can, but let's say you'd raise your rental rates on all your tenants, $10 every month. Somebody's going to get mad and move out. You're going to make people, you can't just raise rates like every month. That's not, it doesn't work that way. Maybe once every 6 months. Yeah. Once every month. No, that doesn't work that way. Conversely, or the opposite of that is when rates come down, you're susceptible to that as well. So if the market is lowering rates for 10 by 10s, you know, within a 3 mile radius of your facility, you are either you're going to be the highest because you're the best, you know, class A, really nice facility. You can kind of lead the market. But if you're not that, then you're probably in a race to the bottom, right? So that's something that you have to think about. If you're battling against REITs and whatnot, it can become a race to the bottom where they're now renting a 10 by 10 for $50. And if you do the same thing, you're going to go broke, you know? So there's things to think about. The reverse of the pros are sometimes can also be cons.
Right. And I like that. Thanks for taking the time to break down some of the barriers or the obstacles in the industry. But I think also inside of those obstacles, that's what creates opportunity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you guys have found a way to kind of work around all of those moving pieces and say, okay, we still see opportunity here. Some things to be certainly aware of. So
you have to set up investor expectations. If you're raising capital from investors, we've run into this issue in the past. I've run into this issue in the past where you set expectations, you send them an OM of what you're going to do or your syndication docs or whatever. Hey, we're going to go out and find 10 deals and we're going to give you this return or whatever. Then the market shifts and now returns are lower and now you're stuck. Right. So you have to set investor expectations. Guys, you're jumping into this business. Storage is wonderful, but 10% return cash on cash year one is probably not going to happen unless you find a needle in a haystack, a massive haystack. Right. So this is probably not going to happen. So you have to set those expectations and where we're at in the market right now. This is a tough business to be in, but there are opportunities and there's reasons why so much capital is jumping into self-storage. Just got to be a little disciplined in what you're going after.
When you set those expectations for investors, I don't care how you set it. If you say, hey, look, you know, like you said, it's a tough business. You know, you're not going to get a 10% cash on cash return. How do you attract capital?
Well, where else are you going to go? So there's the investors need to look at the universe of investments, right? They like the stock market. They like bonds. They like whatever. And I'm not negative on any of that stuff. A lot of real estate investors, oh, don't put your money in the stock. No, no, no. Plenty of people can make a lot of money in the stock market. So if you like the stocks, you like whatever, that's fine. If you're looking at real estate, okay, what's the investable universe of real estate? You got multifamily, retail, office, industrial, et cetera. Okay, well, where are the returns there for the risk that I'm taking on? Risk and return, not just both. If it's high return, there's got to be high risk somewhere, even if it's not immediately disclosed or fully understood.
Right.
Okay. So if you go back and look at REIT returns over the last 20 years, you can find that data on REIT.com and download it. Anybody can do that. And you can see returns for publicly traded REITs, all the different sectors, data centers, multifamily, et cetera. And you can compare year over year and kind of do an analysis. Self-storage has one of the best returns of all property types. So what does that mean? Higher returns at some point will push more investors into that asset class, driving down returns because there is less risk. That's why bonds return so little, because there's very little risk associated with bonds, whereas cryptocurrency has a very high potential return, but very high risk and a lot of volatility and swings in the market. So if an investor is educated on their own, I'm not saying they're not dumb or whatever, but I'm just saying if they educate themselves on all of those options, the investable universe of what I can invest in, then what does real estate look like? What's the risk return trade-off? Then they will understand, okay, storage is a great bet.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Chris, what is something you are curious about right now?
How to find more deals really right now. So while I'm working on that, we're doing a couple of things to source off-market deals, working with a couple of brokers to do that for us. And then I picked up a book I'm reading through, so I can't recommend it yet, but it's actually been very good so far on helping me understand, you know, what I should do as far as just staying in front of people, networking and those sorts of things. So that's what I'm trying to work on at this moment.
Got it. And that was my next question for you. What are you reading right now? So if you have another book that you want to recommend that you might have be reading or just finished reading.
Yeah, I finished Stephen Schwarzman's book. I have it over there, What It Takes. I listened to audiobooks. And so that one was a really good one. I actually liked his story and the tips he gives at the very end. I think one of them always stands out to me is to, and I'm just summarizing here, but to basically dream big dreams, set big goals. Those are the things you should go after. And I really like Gary Keller as well. The One Thing and The Millionaire Real Estate Investor. Those are great books He focuses more on single family there or just units, multifamily and that kind of thing. But the concepts are still the same. And I really like Gary Keller's stuff. So those two things go together. Set big goals because those are the things worth going after. So
love it. Chris, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
They can find me on LinkedIn. Just search Chris with a K, K-R-I-S Bennett, Chris Bennett on LinkedIn. You can also send me an email. I may not respond right away. Chris, K-R-I-S at passiveinvesting.com.
Thank you, Chris, for your time. Have a great rest of your day.
Awesome. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.